Tired of the hassle and risks of manual fruit cutting? Let me introduce our partners over at Supercut System, the automated solution that enhances safety, quality, and efficiency. Cut up to 120 perfect citrus wedges per minute, 6 times faster than manual. Patented technology delivers consistent slices, reducing waste and eliminating plastic. The contactless hygienic design lowers contamination risk and workplace injuries. Supercut integrates seamlessly for any volume, improve profitability and customer experience. Experience the power of automation with Supercut. Get started today at supercut.com and be sure to ask about their risk-free trials.
Elevate your dining experience with Rack Porcelain USA. As the exclusive tableware brand for the Walk and Talk podcast, Rack combines exceptional craftsmanship with innovative design. Whether you're a chef, a restaurant owner, or a food enthusiast, Rack's high-quality porcelain products will enhance every meal. Discover the artistry of food presentation and make every dining occasion special. Visit RackPorcelain.com today and see how Rack can transform your table. Chefs and food buyers, let me tell you about a product that will generate new excitement on your menu. Fully cooked, pasture-raised, all-natural Australian lamb from Aussie Select. Their award-winning, handcrafted, innovative products are blended with the finest spices and amazing flavors. Options include agave rosemary, tikka masala, lamb pastrami, and lamb prime rib roast. Available sliced or whole with a long shelf life too. Find out more at AussieSelect.com.
Tired of the hassle and risks of manual fruit cutting? Let me introduce our partners over at Supercut System, the automated solution that enhances safety, quality, and efficiency. Cut up to 120 perfect citrus wedges per minute, 6 times faster than manual. Patented technology delivers consistent slices, reducing waste and eliminating plastic. The contactless hygienic design lowers contamination risk and workplace injuries. Supercut integrates seamlessly for any volume. Improve profitability and customer experience. Experience the power of automation with Supercut. Get started today at supercut.com and be sure to ask about their risk-free trials.
Hello, food fam. This is the Walk and Talk podcast, where you will find the perfect blend of food, fun, and cooking knowledge. I'm your host, Carl Fidini. Welcome to the number one food podcast in the country. We're recording on site at Ibis Images Studios, where food photography comes alive and I get to eat it. First things first, last week on the show, we had Mark Maurer, owner of Selene Cheese. He's a cheese maker that specializes in manufacturing fresh mozzarella cheese. Oh my goodness, I love it. I personally enjoyed listening to the episode as much as I did eating the product. Hashtag burrata. If you missed it, go back and check it out. Thank you, Peninsula Food Service, for supplying the proteins for today's production. Chefs in the Central Florida area, Peninsula is the largest distributor of Creekstone Farm beef in the Southeast USA, complete with a fully staffed butcher shop to help you solve your kitchen inconsistencies. Check out the dry age program too, baby. I love it. Our guest this week, oh boy, Michelle Miller, also known as the Farm Babe. We're talking misleading food labels. Yeah, you'd know her on IG as the Farm Babe. Check her out there. Michelle is a farm and food advocate. You've seen her on Dr. Drew, Inside Edition, Forbes, and now here on Walk and Talk. Stay tuned. Farm Babe is on deck. By the way, Walk and Talk was at the NRA show in Chicago this past week. Oh my goodness, the stories, the debauchery. Jeff and Pooch were there, and we're going to get the skinny on the experience. We're going to keep it PG. Jeff, you did a lot of cooking today. I see the meats. Brother, pop the clutch. Pre-shift. Make it happen. Let's go.
Well, we're going to give a huge, first off, we're going to give a huge shout out to Citrus America, because that was our base while we were there. I think they were in the 5,400s, and that went up to like 1,200, about 12,000, by the way. That place was absolutely ginormous. Both Pooch and I, it was our first time being there.
Hold on, because you know there's a lot of people who've never been to a trade show, food show, something like that. So we're talking rows, like row 100, row 5,000. How many rows were there?
I saw up to 12,000.
12,000 rows. of vendors. Imagine the scope. It's 10 football fields.
It's 760,000 square feet long.
Yeah.
Basically. So it was in three different buildings.
Yeah.
It was the North, Lakeland, and South. The South was the actual largest. There were two convention halls that you had to go across. RAC was one of them that was in the other room where Citrus America was, where in the first room that we were in. So you had Metro Productivity and Solutions. They were right, generally about not too far away from where we were with Citrus America. In between was a whole bunch of equipment suppliers. And yes, we're going to be looking for equipment suppliers because we are going to be working on a commercial kitchen. So we'll have to have them come in.
By the way, people, a walk and talk studio commercial kitchen. It's not just like a commercial kitchen. No. This is big time.
Well, not only that, think about this. You know how like stadiums have it named after a brand? The kitchen's going to be named after the brand. So
correct.
Whoever wants to come up, pony up, buddy, pony up. Then we had Uncommon Chef. Let me just tell you about Uncommon Chef. I was trying to get a hold of our person that you guys were having the shirts on right now. And I called Kimberly and she's like, yeah, I'm over in 700. Now, remember, I'm 5,400. Mm-hmm. It took us an hour, an hour to get to her. And it was not just because we got stopped. It was that long of a walk to get from that one point to the next point. Costa Coffee, this thing was coming in from England. It's this really cool coffee maker that actually scans the coffee pod and knows exactly what's in there and then gives the exact ratio of the coffee that you want to put into the coffee cup. So you have the perfect cup of coffee all the time.
I mean, I'm always looking for the maximum amount of coffee to put in the coffee thing.
Yeah. And then there was one with Chef Warehouse. It was a plant-based butter called Toralimi. That one was absolutely fantastic. She's a baker who went and said, I'm going to do my own stuff. She did a great different products that she was giving people out. Even the butter by itself was fantastic. Avocados from Mexico. My God, that booth was just slammed every time we walked over past it because they had great chefs from Mexico that they were doing. Pooch and I were actually able to get to the bar or the food part of it. We actually got to sit there and watch them cook. At the end of it, didn't have any idea, but we got this great book that was from Chef Patty that was really nice of her to give us the book. She signed the autographs too. then we had Stavely Wordworks, which is a buddy of mine, Chris. Fiero, which I'll let Pooch talk about that one because that was really cool. Spiceology is one. The other one, and Kalahari Water Entertainment Parks. We met the gentleman who was in charge of that one, so we're going to be talking to him. And then we went to the Viceroy for RAC.
I know you were telling me about this Viceroy, how beautiful it is. I think we need to figure out how we're going to get there and work something out with those guys.
Yeah, that 18th floor overlooking the lake and the affinity pool was just amazing. They did the whole revamp on that thing. And then our buddy Joey Rowland and Foster Deadman over at Ed Don. It was great to see them, especially Foster, because I haven't seen him in a long time. So, Pooch, you have anything you want to throw out there? Maybe the little trip to Gibson's that you had?
Yeah, I mean, I'm just sitting here racking my brain, and you know, and I'm sensory overload. I got home last night at 2 a.m. from Chicago, and it's just the biggest part of the whole thing was realizing that, you know, New Orleans has always been praised as this hospitality town, and I'm really not trying to talk a lot of mess about New Orleans in any way, but Chicago was just such a class act. For every dining experience was amazing, even down to just a hot dog on the street. You know, it was so cool, and it's such a place that it's going through my mind right now. I just want to go back. There's so much more to explore. As far as the show, I mean, the show is just, I'm still processing. I've never been to anything this big and so informative. You know, you really could spend a whole week rather than just 4 days. But the highlight for me, honestly, was Toralimi. I think those ladies are really doing great, great things with. You know, I'm not a vegan, but I do appreciate vegans. I do understand what their reasoning is for their lifestyle and the way they want to eat. You would never know that this is vegan. So I do, the health benefits of doing this and the uses of this butter in any way, shape, or form, more so than just taste, it's amazing. I really love those girls. They did a great job. And, I think they sold themselves better than anybody else there. really, really awesome.
Well, the massage guys did a good job, didn't they?
That they did. They kept me alive. So the
don't look at me that ton of voice, Carl. He's looking at me like, oh, mom, messed up. Nah, you want to explain
not that?
That
kind of massage.
You want to explain that? Kind of massage. It's day one, and they got him. Day one.
Okay.
Not even 5 minutes there. He goes, want a massage? Back hurt? And he, next thing I know, I'm like, where's Pooch?
Well, we get there, and they're saying, like, sit down. They're asking you to sit down. So I'm thinking, oh, I have a sciatica. I've been on a plane for 3 hours anyway. Sciatica problem. I may as well go ahead and have these people try to work something out. When I go back, it ends up being that it's one of those little vibrating electric shock things that you put on your muscle. We need to get in touch with these people. I'm not going to mention their names. They're a huge, huge company. But reason being is it's for chefs. It's made for chefs that are standing on their feet all day long. And, I was really happy that it wasn't just people trying to throw food in your face. They were trying to actually give you something that benefits you. Yes, sir.
Are there dark web? Is there a dark web video of you?
No.
That's all I want to know.
No. No, he did. It did help him out. He was able to walk. It was it was a game changer for him.
Okay.
It was a big show, bro.
I know, it's huge. And the idea is that we're going to be doing more of these shows, and we're going to do some more collaborations with some of these other vendors and suppliers at the show.
I think one of the best things we heard from some major companies was like, we know your podcast, our marketing people actually told us to get on it and make sure we're listening to it.
That's awesome.
Yeah. That wasn't just once. Yeah.
So listen, random story. We're going to get to the guts of the show today. I was with one of the owners from the porch the other day, and we were just, having a conversation about next dinner and some things we can do. And we're sitting at a bar and just having a convo, and there was a fella sitting next to us, and we're talking restaurant and food stuff. So partway in, he stops and says, hey, sorry guys, excuse me, but you guys are in the business. And we're like, yeah, So he was a private chef, and he also works at a pretty prestigious club. And long story short, the fellow I was with, I'm not going to name the names right now, but the fellow I was with says, well, you know who this guy is, right? He's a Walk and Talk podcast. And the guy's face lit up, like legit, like it was, it wasn't BS. And he goes, oh man, I listen to you guys. I was like, oh my God, you're kidding me. Like you're full of it. He's like, no, he's dead serious. Anyway, random as random could possibly be, such a cool thing, because who the hell are we? Like, honestly, like who are we? And this is so beautiful. It's such an awesome thing. So the fact that that happened where you were at the NRA, dude. Yeah. We're getting where we got to go.
Well, we also had the VP to the National Restaurant Association. We actually were interviewing. We asked some questions. We were the only actual reporters that were actually, asking questions about what they were talking about with trends and AI and all that. He actually pointed us out when we went over to their booth. They had a booth of themselves, and they had a podcast, and they had their social media people there too as well. And they're like, hey, these guys are legit the number one food podcast. And you guys, they were asking great questions. So we actually impressed him as well. So that was really great too.
From your mouth to God's ears. And we're making some strides. All right. We're 11 minutes into this thing. Very quickly, Jeff, what are we cooking up today?
We're focusing on some good old fashioned, Memorial Day stuff. We got some, smoked ribs that I'd use the Sweetwater coffee rub on there as well. A couple weeks ago, I got some sour oranges from the competition I did from Vicky Webster. So I had the case at my house in the refrigerator. So I used orange blossom, scotch bonnet, honey glaze for tri-tips that we're doing that smoked. We're doing some smash burgers that are going to be really cool, because we're going to be doing a creme brulee, brulee avocado with some chipotle pepper in there. Then I did a mojo brined Latin spiced bone-in chicken that we're going to use some burrata. So we're going to char the bread.
Is that Selena?
Yep.
Okay.
You know how I'm working it. And then we got some baby arugula, but I'm going to switch it up now because thank you, Marvin, yet again from Cahaba Club. Some beautiful microgreens coming from him. So it's going to be fantastic. Side dishes, we're going to be doing eggplant bombs, what I call sweet chili eggplant bombs, or the Thai chilies, those little guys, charred them, actually threw them on the charcoal and charred them. We have a white bean chili with Hatch chilies because they were actually at the show that gave me the idea. Watermelon, feta cheese, cucumber salad. And then this one is probably the most ridiculous one I think I came up with, is a kimchi potato salad.
Chefs and food buyers, let me tell you about a product that will generate new excitement on your menu. Fully cooked, pasture-raised, all-natural Australian lamb from Aussie Select. Their award-winning, handcrafted, innovative products are blended with the finest spices and amazing flavors. Options include agave rosemary, tikka masala, lamb pastrami, and lamb prime rib roast. Available sliced or whole with a long shelf life too. Find out more at AussieSelect.com.
Kimchi potato salad. Okay. I mean, listen, you know me, I'm down for whatever.
Well, you're my beaker. Yes. You're my experimenter. So exactly. You get the taste.
So, yeah, it works out pretty good. I am, you know, what's really exciting for me today is this,
you get to eat.
Well, yeah, it's Thursday, right? I mean, it's a Pavlov's dog thing for me. Like, you know, Wednesday night I start drooling cause I know tomorrow's Thursday. Ring the bell. Is the smash burger.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, listen, I don't want to say I'm like basic, but you know, sometimes I just feel like being basic.
This is not basic.
No,
there's nothing about that's basic.
No, not at all. Marvin, you know, hold on. Marvin, Cahaba Club, Marvin, dude, you sent like a, I don't know, 40 pounds of microgreens, bro. I mean, the box is gigantic. I mean, it came in the big FedEx truck. I'm just saying, thank you, man. You're awesome. We love you.
What cheese is that right there?
What am I looking at? I don't know. Oh, Oaxaca.
Oaxaca is going to be the cheese on the burger.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Oaxaca. All right. That's good stuff. All right. Listen, we've heard enough of you.
I know you have. She's drooling. She needs food.
I can see it. All right. So in studio, we have the farm babe. She's a big city globe trotter turned farm girl is what it says. Is that right? Welcome to the show, Michelle.
Thanks for having me.
We've been talking about this for like, I don't know, few months now, mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
And you're here.
I'm here.
And you did like a 2-hour drive to get here.
Actually, sounded more like three.
Almost three.
Even worse.
Three months I stopped.
Okay. Hey, listen, thanks for being on the show. And today, before we get into some of the topics that we were going to get into, can you do a 30,000 like airplane view of who you are, how you got there, you know, and why you're like kind of a big deal, like big personality now. Like you're kind of up there. Go ahead.
Well, thank you very much. So I'm Michelle Miller, known as the Farm Babe on social media, and I work to bridge the gap between consumers and farmers. And so myth busting is a bit of my niche. And my background is an interesting one because I like to say I went from rodeo to the rodeo. I actually got a fashion degree from Los Angeles and I worked for Gucci on Rodeo Drive. And then I ended up becoming a farmer. I moved to Iowa I moved to Iowa for love. I dated a farmer for almost 8 years, and together we farmed in Northeast Iowa, a couple thousand acres of row crops like corn, soybeans, hay, cattle, sheep, had a nice size farm. And I started the Farm Babe about 10 years ago as a way to debunk myths, because as a large scale farmer myself, I realized that there was a lot of misinformation out there. And so from there, it just grew. And now I'm a keynote speaker. I have a podcast. I'm an author, social media influencer, and getting ready to launch an event. And doing everything I can to give science and farmers a bigger voice in the food space.
So that's a mouthful, and you're doing a lot. And in today's, you know, when you're talking about like social media and you're talking about trying to capture somebody's attention, you have to do a lot in order to kind of frame out or carve out your piece of it, right?
Yeah.
Because, you know, we're in the same situation. You know, we do the podcast, menu, you know, food dish videos. We do, cocktail videos. We have a magazine. Like we're doing a ton of stuff. Plus we're doing the dinners, which you went to, you came out last month to the Porch Meadery and Market over there in Winter Park. Mm-hmm. How was that? Did you like it?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. It was amazing.
Right?
Yeah.
You look, I mean, you look great. You and your guest. I mean, you guys were like, you were the talk of the town. I'm just saying.
Oh, well, thank you. Appreciate that. It was a good time.
Yes. All right. So let's talk labels. Let's talk grocery. Let's talk food.
This is what I do.
I know.
Myth busting the grocery aisle. Yes. Something I speak on a lot as a keynote speaker at events and stuff.
Yeah. I mean, was that your kind of your, the nine labels? Was that your kickoff? Was that your starting point?
That was
point?
My very first article I wrote for Ag Daily. Yeah. Back in 2015. So I've been a weekly columnist with them now for almost a decade. And a lot of it is myth busting.
So 2015, 2016, back then, it's not like that's that long ago, but it kind of, it's, oh my God, anyway, we're almost
decade,
10 years.
Right? Yeah.
So things now, I think the topics that you were bringing up then are more prevalent now than they were 10 years ago.
Yeah. I think it depends on the topic. I feel like I've seen some kind of ebb and flow, some talking points getting louder in mainstream media versus one kind of dying out, but everything is still pretty prevalent, I think.
So out of the nine, right? So you have like no hormones, antibiotic free, organic, cage free, RBST free, GMO, vegetarian, gluten, chemical free. Out of those labels, which one is the one that irks you the most?
Gosh, all of them. Just kidding. I think the no added hormones thing is a pretty big one. When you are seeing packages at the grocery store on poultry or pork that says no added hormones or steroids, you just got to read the asterisks and the fine print. It's actually not even a thing. And so many people think that meat is just pumped full of all this artificial stuff. And that couldn't be further from the truth. Chicken is just chicken. There's no hormones. There's no steroids. Hormones and steroids haven't been used since the 1950s. And so we're seeing bigger chickens and, better quality just because of science. I mean, they've learned how to master the feed and their comfort. And so I think a lot of the myths around animal housing, I think if people understood just how much care and research went into animal comfort, that you don't necessarily need to buy into a more expensive label to realize that you're still getting a really great quality product that could come from a really amazing farm, regardless of size or label.
Where does the analysis or data come from that? Because obviously so there's that perspective, but the other perspective, it's an equal force against. Right. So where does whose data
so
is correct?
The thing about it is marketing, right? So the food companies always want to be selling you a more expensive product, and so the marketing dollars are there to try to convince you to spend more money. That's what their whole goal is, to profit, and they've done a great job. But the science, if you dig in, so like for me personally, I've worked with a lot of poultry science departments at universities. So let's start with Alabama. Let's start with Auburn. Okay, University of Georgia. I think Auburn University have really great poultry science departments, and that's where most of my expertise comes in. So I speak and I tour these places for a living, right? And I go right in the nitty-gritty of the science. And then you just see all the research that goes into lighting, that goes into comfort, that understands spacing, that you don't want to have chickens too crowded because they won't grow. It's kind of like if you think about fish in a fish pond. If you cram them in there too much, a lot of people think that they're just crammed in, and that's not true because then they wouldn't grow. And so I think just the science of understanding stocking density, where we can maximize production while using the fewer inputs, right? So we're using fewer antibiotics. There's no hormones anymore. We're improving genetics, improving comfort, light, little things like lighting, and if you go from meat chickens over to say eggs, they've realized, lighting matters, comfort, temperature, and then cages. Now the cages are better in egg laying systems. So now it's an enriched cage. So now the modern egg laying facilities will have perches and nesting boxes and, little scratching posts and stuff. So they, it's not like it used to be. And I think a lot of people aren't hearing that. They're not hearing the science-based messaging that comes from decades worth of people that have PhDs in poultry science that spend decades and hundreds of millions of dollars just on focusing on making them awesome and comfortable, right? So I think kind of the myths around how animals are raised is probably a hill I will die on.
But and I don't want to, I'm still learning, and I'm not afraid to say that, right?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And you hear so much against that, what you're saying, right? Where do you get the right, where do people find the right data points? Where's the analysis? Because I know a lot of people who are like literally going to die on the other side of the hill, right? Mm-hmm. And I respect anyone who's into a topic like this and pours themselves into it, because, at the end of the day, it is our food source. It's our health. It's our children. It's the animals. It's all of that. Right. Mm-hmm. And I think it is something that deserves, my opinion is that it deserves more conversation, but I think it deserves more open conversation, mm-hmm. because what I see is, it is a hill. And when we say die on a hill, mm-hmm. that's usually because there's two opposing sides trying to, take each other out.
Yeah.
And I don't feel like it should be that.
That's a great point. I agree. Yeah.
I feel like it should be something where you're like, hey, what your feeling on the matter is valid, but check this out.
Totally.
You need to see this, and then they need to, and we need to look at like all the data points.
Right. Exactly.
So yeah. where do the data points come from?
Yeah. And I used to be on the other side, right? Like I used to only buy organic, free range, every expensive label under the sun. So I completely understand. And we have to understand that we always have to go to the source. So sometimes people that have the opposing view may be because they've never actually gone to a large scale chicken farm. And we have to remember that chicken farmers, or farmers in general, are only 1% of the population. So their voices are very easily drowned out. And again, there is a lot of money to be made off of consumer fear, and there's a lot of misinformation, but marketing is there to make it look like this beautiful, pretty picture. But, I've toured some of the largest farms in the country, cattle feedlots with hundreds of thousands of head or, millions of chickens. I know, a lot of people that I've been inside their farms. And I think that's kind of what people are missing, is that they're not exploring, kind of like my side of the argument, right? They're just hearing the media noise, and there's so much money being funneled. If you look at something like the vegan movement, okay, now I've got nothing against vegans. If that's the way they choose to live their life, it's fine. But at the end of the day, if you have HSUS, the Humane Society of the United States, they lobby over $140 million a year to try to put livestock farmers out of business. There's some big money behind it. And they're tied directly to PETA, Mercy for Animals, DXE, like all of these animal rights activist groups. And so there's a lot of money to be made off of consumer fear, and also from ideology of the well-funded vegan activists. So we always have to go to the source. It's just kind of like, if you want to talk about your teeth, you go to your dentist. If you want to talk to your mechanic, you go there. The research, if you're going to read up on it, make sure you know where it's coming from. Is it coming from somebody with a PhD that does this for a living, that really knows what they're talking about, that has really invested in it? Or is it, somebody from New York City, or they have a small scale farm? And I love small scale farms, and I will promote that all day first, right? Like buying local first is the most important thing. I'm not going to sit here and say the big way is the only way. Like that would just be stupid. But we need them, right? We need farms of all shapes and sizes and labels to feed the world. And so there's such an important piece for having affordable protein for people. And I just encourage people to try to track that down, like go through University Extension, Farm Bureau. University Extension is probably one of the best resources where you can connect directly to the people with the PhDs and on the scientist level.
Elevate your dining experience with Rack Porcelain USA. As the exclusive tableware brand for the Walk and Talk podcast, Rack combines exceptional craftsmanship with innovative design. Whether you're a chef, a restaurant owner, or a food enthusiast, Rack's high-quality porcelain products will enhance every meal. Discover the artistry of food presentation and make every dining occasion special. Visit rackporcelain.com today and see how Rack can transform your table.
So the one problem for me that based on that is a lot of times, I'm going to point out, back in the day, milk was the protein that everybody wanted because it was funded by the milk industry. Then it was the egg industry back in the 80s and 90s, like Rocky. We were cracking eggs and having raw eggs, and it was, oh, you're going to have salmonella. And then it's morphed into so many different things. For me, it's like, who's paying for it? Perfect movie that was out recently, Fork to Knife, was kind of like the spearhead, the jump off. And it was this thing about, the world's strongest man is a vegan. Well, that's great. But who funded that movie was Beyond Meat, which is Cameron, the guy that did the Titanic, he's one of the major investors. So there's a problem when you say you have to look at it when you have science is telling us, well, who funded the scientists? That's number one. Because obviously if it's this group over here is funding them, obviously they're not going to talk that to them because they were getting the money from them. So it's a very convoluted way of saying we have to look at the science. Yeah, there's science in everything, but who's funding the scientist is the problem. Like, you know, beef. There's certain things that you can't say about beef because look at Oprah Winfrey was taken to court. $1 million later, she won her case. So there are things that are out there that you, profit margins are going to be kept there. But the bottom line is we have to make sure that there's transparency. Mm-hmm. And I think Food Chains is a great movie to point that out. Sangwei is the last name of that one, the producer, director. That opened my eyes to what was going on.
I haven't seen that one.
Yeah, that one is a huge one that really can, it's on Netflix, it's out there. It's one of those things you listen, you sit there and you watch and you go, okay, what's going on?
Yeah, and what's really interesting about Netflix is within the agriculture community, this is going to be really blunt, but like we're kind of getting our asses kicked in the PR when you do look at the science, because science doesn't sell. And mm-hmm. when you do talk to the experts, they're kind of boring. I love them.
They're Ben Stein.
Yeah. Let's
be honest. Yeah. Bueller.
Yeah.
Bueller.
Except and less interesting.
So when our industry does put out the Netflix type documentaries, Netflix never picks them up. They pick up the quote documentaries, because a lot of them are not truthful. But they pick up the ones that are going to sell. And what sells is fear and hyperbole and a story and scary. And I see our industry put together videos that are very truthful and they're great. And they really promote the truth in science, but they don't have that Tom Brady and Giselle edge like they have in some of the so-called documentaries. And when you look at the people funding the anti-meat movement, you know, they've got Ellen DeGeneres and Arnold Schwarzenegger and Natalie Portman. And because yes, you are correct. In the 90s, got milk was everything. Why did we all know, as I don't know what year y'all were born, but I was born in 82. And, you know, when we're kids in the 90s going, wow, I was like, wow, I want to be like Cindy Crawford when I grow up. I want to drink milk. And so it is very much a media marketing, but that Got Milk campaign costed $40 million just to get off the ground. And now I wonder where all of that money's going, because now like silk milk is like the soy milk. Now they're doing a thing called the Next Milk campaign, which is all of the kids from those celebrities with silk mustaches. And so it's like they're totally ripping it off, because I feel like our industry is run by a lot of older males who don't really understand media and social media anymore. And so back in the day when it was easy, we'll just do commercials, we'll do magazine ads, we'll do television. And now I'm sitting here kind of like wanting to bang my head against the wall, because I was like, you guys are missing the mark on social media influencers, celebrities, because now the people that have taken that narrative is the Netflix of the world, is the celebrities of the world, being funded by Beyond Meat, being funded by the vegans. There are hundreds of millions of dollars. Don't let the scary part of farming fool you. They're very well funded to try to convince us that our food has a doom and gloom story.
Well, it kind of does, because if you look at it like the European Union, you look at the flour, for instance, it's not enriched, it's not bleached. They have, you know, a certain way of doing things. There's no bromide. So here in the United States, we let certain things go in, whereas the EU doesn't. If you look at the box and it's traveling around right now, there's a picture of Quaker oats.
Oh, that's been debunked for years.
But if you look at that at its face value, and somebody who doesn't know that's been out there, you look at that and go, what the heck are they feeding us?
Yeah.
So, I mean, the fear part of it, that's a great thing, because, again, it's a part of national security. You know, if we don't have food, then that's a national security problem.
But here's another interesting thing about that. First of all, that meme needs to be fact checked, because it's not even true. If you actually dig in on the actual ingredients, it's not nearly. I know the woman that did that meme, and she is one of the biggest sources of misinformation. I don't know if I should say her name, but let's just say that my brand is built off of debunking her, because nothing she says is true. If you actually fact check that meme, and I hate that it still goes viral because it's like not true. But also the EU, is not required to disclose all of the ingredients that we are. So a lot of sugars and everything in the US, they are required. We must list every ingredient, and the EU actually doesn't have that. And the other thing that's interesting is a lot of people say, oh, when I go to Europe, I can eat bread just fine, and I can do all these things just fine. And is there a little bit of truth to changes and additives? Sure. But also they import all of our stuff. So when, you know, people are like, oh, I can eat this Europe stuff. And it's like, okay, well, guess what? That was all it's grown in the US. Like, it's the same wheat here as it is in there. So you don't really know where it comes from. The food is a global situation. And so a lot of times it's just,
well, the United States and the Ukraine are the two largest wheat producers in the
sunflower
world.
Actually, Ukraine is sunflour.
Wheat also. They're the two largest wheat growers in the planet.
It's, yeah, Ukraine is a huge breadbasket. Like, yeah.
And also semolina is actually more done in the Dakotas than it is in Italy. So that's another thing too. A lot of people don't realize.
I always say it's very much a placebo effect, and this is just my opinion and my theory. This is not backed in any type of scientific data, but just in my opinion, I would say, you know, when you're on vacation, like when I go to Italy, it's one of my favorite places in the world. You feel better because you're on vacation. Like, you're in Italy. So you're like, oh my God, I felt so great. The food was so much better. It's like, bitch, you can get Cheetos in Italy too. You know what I mean? Like, you can get Coca-Cola and junk food and cookies everywhere in the world. But
I can tell you this, because I'm picking up what you're putting down. And I fall, you know, these guys will tell you, I typically fall in the center on this because I know that there's a tug and pull to all this, right? Where there's truths, and you know, there's truths on both sides, and then there's this gray area in the middle, and we're all getting pulled back and forth on it. Mm-hmm. I get that, right? But I will tell you this: I've had ancient grain pasta here from elsewhere, and I can eat, and I'm Italian, and I've been eating pasta my whole life. And I used to, when I was younger, I can go and have three giant bowls of rigatoni's, totally fine. Mm-hmm. Now I have, you know, half a bowl of rigatoni's, and I'm just like, oh, okay, all right, I'm good. I ate a pound of this ancient grain pasta. I wasn't bloated. It was amazing. And as I understand it, it's just less gluten. The G word doesn't scare me. You know what I mean? But I experienced that. And I'm going to say that it wasn't a placebo, although I know what you're talking about. Yeah. And I think that I think that holds a lot of weight percentage wise. You're probably right. But I'll tell you that I know that my experience was real. I mean, yeah. I ate a pound of it. I was like, man, I feel great. I can go in for seconds.
Yeah. And you never know, right? Like, that could very much be well and true. But it's like when I'm in Italy, it's, you know, you're walking more, you're getting more exercise, you're happier, you're not at work, your stress level, like, stress is the number one killer. So reducing that stress of being on vacation, you know, yeah, the birds chirp brighter, the sun shines brighter, the birds chirp better, you know, it's like the dogs are cuter, everything's better because you're on vacation.
That's the same here at Ibis Images Studios. I'm just saying, like, we experience that same.
I'm about to eat like 30 pounds of your ancient grain chicken and tell everybody how amazing it is. This is like heaven on earth in the studio, let me tell you.
It's kind of what we do. Yeah, we make, we hand out smiles. That's what we do.
You know, I worked in the other side, right, the sales side of things, and there's stories you always hear. Back in the 50s when we had Wonder Bread come out, and we then went to mass production, when we had people get sick, the Band-Aid effect was fortifying it. And that was where we went. If you look at any type of religion you're in, and if you look at the basis of it, no one said, oh, John, he died of celiac disease. Mm-hmm. So bread and wheat is the foundation of what civilization was, let alone, let's not talk about spices, but wheat in itself. So if you look around the world at cultures that use as the backbone of their products of carbohydrates, rice and breads and wheat, China, Japan, India, Italy, France, Spain, they don't have the amount of celiac or gluten tolerant problems as the United States does.
Actually, they do. The prevalence of celiac disease is actually higher in the EU than it is in the United States. Look it up.
All right. I will. Trust me.
Okay. Wait, where?
Well, I mean,
and who was it funded
by? The average person would just Google it, right? But it's just important that when you Google it, you look at the source of where it comes from and which, you know.
This is where I personally have challenges because, you know, it just seems, and this is not even going to, it just seems that when you, when a side puts out a data point and pushes it, okay, cool. Oh, look, it's CNN, I don't know, whatever. And then it's another side that pushes the antithesis of, and it says, oh, it's Fox. All right, now we're all being played because there's one side pushing
there's always going to be
the other side pushing it. And again, we're in the middle and we're getting tugged both ways. And I don't know that we're getting all the facts.
We're not.
Yeah, I could see that. And it's interesting too, sometimes when people say, well, that was just funded by the wheat board, right? But, and first of all, we should also say GMOs are another thing, myth that I love to bust. And there's actually no such thing as GMO wheat. All wheat is non-GMO. It's all modified, but it's still considered non-GMO. So that's another interesting fact.
What is the devil in the definition there then? How does that work?
Yeah. So GMOs would refer to very specific plant breeding processes like transgenic or cisgenic or RNAi interference as different types of plant breeding methods. So Norman Borlaug would be like the godfather of wheat, you know, back in the 70s that created these certain dwarf. He's credited with saving a billion lives with these wheat that he developed. Where was I going with this? Oh, okay. So kind of going back to the source, I feel like food is one of these things where when we have a question about our car, we go to our car manufacturer. When we have a question about our cell phone, we go to our cell phone manufacturer. And so when something like, well, the wheat board, so according to the wheat board, for example, another myth I love to bust is people think that it's sprayed with glyphosate. Now, according to the wheat board, it's less than 3% of U.S. acres are sprayed with Roundup glyphosate. Less than 3%. And I believe that just based purely on the fact that I talk to farmers for a living. So I think if anybody talks to, and this is in the United States, it's a little bit more common practice in Canada, but when you talk to actual wheat growers, they'll be like, I don't know anybody that does that. And so it's one of these things you have to go to the source. So while I understand, well, that's just funding. Who do you believe? Do we believe the people that do it for a living that have a PhD and decades of experience in the topic? Or is it somebody that's saying, well, you know, I'm a doctor. Well, guess what? A lot of doctors also think that wheat is a GMO and it's not. A lot of doctors think that organic is pesticide free. It's not. Doctors are good at being doctors, but that's the importance of why we have to speak to each other because doctors aren't out there growing thousands of acres of wheat. Wheat farmers are. So it all goes back to the source. So if the wheat board is getting their information and their data from wheat farmers, what's more credible than that?
Get ready to innovate and organize your workspace with Metro. As the industry leader in storage and productivity solutions, Metro is here to transform and organize your kitchen. With their premium solutions, you'll experience the Metro difference. Metro's sturdy and versatile shelving units, workstations, holding cabinets, and utility carts are designed to streamline operations and maximize your productivity. Don't settle for imitators. Metro products last longer and offer unparalleled quality and durability. Plus, many customization options ensure that your workspace is tailored to your unique needs. Visit their website or contact them today to start designing your perfect space. Metro Shelving, your partner in organization and efficiency.
You still got to find out where it's coming from. Again, who's paying it? Who's paying the board? You know, I'm sorry to say it. I'm going to be the devil's advocate every single time.
I appreciate that.
Because yeah. You've got so many different viewpoints and that's the problem is there's nobody that's saying, hey, the truth, you know, there's always three sides of the story, you know, that person, the other person, and then somewhere in the middle. That somewhere in the middle has to be where it raised up.
The other thing though, too, to consider is, so I said I was a commercial farmer for about 8 years, right? And so the other thing is that there is a lot of scrutiny and everything that comes along with that. There's a lot of regulations and things and that we have to adhere to almost to the point where they're regulating farmers to death out of business. So the other thing is that if there is a problem, I guarantee you that problem is being shoved down our throats. Because as the 1%, as a farmer,
it's very easy to misunderstand what we do. And it's very easy to take that mainstream media negativity and run with it to the point where they just think we're a bunch of environmentally destructive assholes and without listening to our side of the story. So if there is a problem, I would also argue that somebody like the Wheat Board or, you know, whatever are going to be saying, hey guys, like, this is happening. Let's figure out how to solve the problem, because the government is still tied to conservation districts, NRCS, like the people that are doing, like our farm had earned awards for Farmer of the Year for soil and water conservation, no-till farming for 30 years, very what you would call regenerative, cover crops, no-till, soil testing. We would be kind of like the poster child of doing the right thing, right? But it's like, we're still growing GMOs, you know, we're still using these certain products that people think are bad. And there's a whole lot of things going on that people believe, well, it's either this or it's that. And the truth is that, you know, you're correct. There's a whole lot of gray areas in there that we're not talking about. And it's got to be more of a balanced perspective with everybody talking to each other.
About 10 years ago, I think there was like a big lawsuit with Roundup, right?
There. Mm-hmm. Parent company.
And I was looking that up, and what came up was politics aside, what came up that I found was this Glenn Beck, right? And one of the guys on his program, he was doing shots on air of Roundup.
Nice.
This was 10 years ago. The guy's still there.
Yeah.
I'm not saying I would do that. I certainly wouldn't do that. But this is kind of the stuff that goes, like, you know, I don't know how to digest that. Not the Roundup, but like the story. Yeah, exactly. Pun intended. I'm not exactly how to tackle that or look at that.
Listen, there's certain things, like when I would, first got into being a farmer advocate myself as a chef, I would ask them, what is your biggest fear? I thought it would be past Mother Nature, drought, famine, obviously all categorized under Mother Nature. No, environmentalist.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Because they're not hearing our side. Everybody wants to point the finger at us. You want to talk about follow the money? Like Florida is a perfect example of who funds the environmentalist groups is the billionaire developers. Okay. So in South Florida, you've got urbanization backing straight up to the Everglades, backing straight up to 260,000 acres owned by U.S. Sugar. And people might think I'm crazy for saying this, but God bless U.S. Sugar, because if it wasn't this big corporate entity, the farmers would be going out of business left and right, because they wouldn't be able to fight against and afford what is the environmentalists are putting them up against. And so they're the ones that can afford to fight back, because here's a documentary you should watch called No Farmers, No Food.
Saw it.
Yeah. And that one's probably one of the more truthful ones I've seen. But back to your point of doing shots of Roundup, I think the point is always the dose makes the poison. So if you look at the LD50 value, it's 5,600 milligrams per kilogram, which technically actually makes it safer than table salt. So it's really interesting, because it's the same concept of like, you can drink a beer, but don't drink the whole keg. You know, it's always everything can be good or bad in moderation. And that's probably when I first started my advocacy a decade ago now. And like I said, it's just been a learning thing for me. But the post that I had that went the most viral was when I talked about how much Roundup we sprayed on our GMOs, because I was so sick and tired of people just thinking we're just out there drenching our stuff in chemicals. And on our cornfield, we were only spraying one day a year, maybe two, in the very beginning of the growing season. And what people don't realize is the amount of chemical we use is so minimal. It's a very fine mist, to the point where if you did the math, you would need to eat something like 86 tons of grain in a single sitting. Like, you know what I mean?
Carl does. I can do it.
Carl can do that. If it's ancient grain, he can definitely do that.
I can do it.
So it's usually between, depending on the crop and region, it's usually between about 12 to 22, maybe 30 ounces per acre. So you're looking at like two beer cans on an area of land the size of a football field. And so we're spraying corn one or two days a year in the beginning of the growing season. And we grow GMOs because if you ask any farmer what it was like back in the 50s or 60s or 70s, we're singing our praises to GMOs because it's allowed us to eliminate chemicals and eliminate pesticides. So you used to have to use
the DDT. And
yeah, that stuff's all gone because Roundup is the
except
safest.
For off.
DEET.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's the safest herbicide we've ever had access to, which is why it's so popular and available at any Home Depot and Roundup or Home Depot or Walmart. But it's someday we can look back because we're always improving technology. Chemistry's pesticides are becoming safer and more targeted than ever before. Like the most popular, you know what the most popular pesticide was about 100 or so years ago? It was arsenic. Arsenic. Yeah. And so people are like, well, we need to get back to the old days. I'm like, to hell we do. You know, like they don't realize how miserable it was. And also it's because of technology that 1% of the population farmers can feed 100%. We used to be like 70 or 80% of the population had to be farmers in order to survive. And now we're looking at, wow, you know,
I love your chic nerdy approach to this.
Oh my God. I could go on and on.
Yeah. But you know, she did mention Florida as the state. And one of the biggest things you look at right now is like Okeechobee, right? Yeah. And that's the runoff. That's the biggest thing. Marco Rubio jumped on it. Rick mm-hmm. Scott jumped on it.
Sure.
You know, they have the mouth of the Gulf, and we have Red Tide, and we have all these like the huge smells that are the algae that's being poured into the Atlantic. Where's this coming from? Is it Big Sugar? Is it everybody's home that's fertilized in their yards? Everyone's pointing the finger at Big Sugar because that's where they need to put now. Is that the environmentalists?
Yeah. It's really easy to do that because once again, farmers are 1% of the population. Mm-hmm. And if you look at who's funding it with the developers, nobody ever talks about the septics, you know? Mm-hmm. So the big thing is septic. They're not nearly regulated, but if you look at the tens of million plus people, they all flush the toilet and they all live at the beach.
And you know what, another, something anecdotal, everybody's on medication now.
Right.
Everybody's on something and all that stuff gets passed through you and you're flushing it and it just is what it is.
Well, my main point to this one is if you look at like, this area in Palm Beach, it's exploding right now because you have, Swarovski helicopters is out there and all the different, top secret stuff being developed out in, which is called, on U-10, on my 10.
How top secret can it be if you know about it?
Well, when you have neighbors work for you and they can't tell you what they're doing, but they're there working on stuff, and you know it's there because you can see it. Westlake is a huge development, 4,500 homes. You know what that used to be? Hmm. It used to be farmland.
Yeah.
And it was closed down because of environmentalists.
Florida is doing the wrong... We're going in the wrong direction.
Well, it's your point.
Where we grew up, well, you know, you were 20 minutes from where I grew up, and I was in Cooper City. In Cooper City, nothing but orange groves and dairy farms.
Well, Sheridan Street stopped at University Drive.
Yeah, right. We were on the dirt road
right
there.
Right.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we had it there.
It is becoming increasingly more difficult for farmers to stay on the land. And it's a lot of government overreach. And it's also here's the real hill I will die on, is the fact that grocery stores need to purchase buy local first and foremost. Everybody is like, when Publix, you know, big grocery store chains, if strawberries are in season in Florida, buy from Florida, and instead they buy from Guatemala or Mexico or third world countries because the farm workers there get paid $10 a day and they can buy fresh produce there for pennies on the dollar. Whereas here, I mean, I know farmers that spend $30,000 a day just in hand labor to get fresh produce to the store.
And what they're doing in Plant City, in that whole area here in Central Florida, where the bread basket.
No, right here in Bartow, dude.
Yeah, where we are. It's the bread basket of strawberries mm-hmm. for the world and nothing but development happening. Mm-hmm.
It's heartbreaking.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Wait, John, because he's not going to talk about it, across the street used to be a blueberry farmer. Guess what's there now? Not him.
No. Mm-hmm.
He sold it.
Yep. Yeah, we want to talk about sustainability and what's going to keep the world green. Cement, concrete, done. We're done. So, but it's becoming so difficult to stay on the farm because they need a place to sell and the input costs continue to go up. So the price of fertilizer has gone up like 300%. Inputs are so expensive. You can't even buy, I mean, myself coming from being a corn farmer in Iowa, it's like, I mean, you want to talk about the price of a new combine, you know, like a cotton picker, $1.2 million. You know, you can look at a farmer and be like, wow, that farmer made, you know, millions of dollars. He made $1 million last year. Well, he didn't tell you that his inputs were 1.1 million, right? So it's they're turning upside down. And so you can have good years and bad years, and you see a lot of successful farmers, and it can and does happen. However, you know, it's like it ebbs and flows. And when it's bad, it can be really bad, and to the point where they're so stressed. And then we've got the suicide, you know, it's a real problem.
58-year-old average, 60-something-year-old is the suicide rate in farmers for male.
And then their kids are going, why do I want to do this?
I'm out. Yep.
So when a developer comes up and says, hey, we'll give you millions of dollars off, or they can't refuse, you kind of can't blame them for wanting to sell out, but it really is heartbreaking. And this is probably the topic that I'm most passionate about over anything.
Okay. We're friends again. Have you ever watched the Clarkson's Farms?
Yes, it's so good. Now, that show is so realistic. I love that one.
So if you guys have never seen Clarkson, he's one of the guys from the HBO special where the guy's Top Gear. He's been controversial, but he bought a farm, and it's a huge farm. I mean, it's not a small one. And the first time, it was during COVID, and he settles up his accounts. And if he didn't get subsidized from the country, England, he would have made $200.
Oh yeah. It's
that's it.
That's what I love about Clarkson's Farm. I encourage everybody to watch it because it is the only show or movie out there that is, in my opinion, very genuinely accurate
and funny as hell.
And funny. I love Clarkson's Farm. I appreciate we're friends again. I really appreciate your skepticism, though. I really do. And I know that people listening are going to be like, who is this bitch? Like, who pays her? Like, you know what I mean? I get that question all the time, and it doesn't offend me. I come from a place of curiosity because I used to believe all the negativity also. And so that's why I've become so passionate about my side of the argument and telling the farmer's story and telling the scientist story and the veterinarian story, because their stuff is boring and it is data, you know, it's data, and nobody wants to read a study. They just want to know, okay, what's the talking point? And the media doesn't pick up the science-based talking points. And so what I've done is tried to make science a little bit more interesting. And through that, through my travels, I just go to the farms and I just interview the experts. And is it always perfect? Of course not. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that everything's hunky-dory. But at the end of the day, people aren't hearing the fact that U.S. sugar reduced their phosphorus levels by 35%. You know, they're not going to hear about best management practices. They're not going to hear about, now I hear about it because I go to farm conferences and I speak at them for a living and I listen to the scientists and I talk to the professionals, but it just doesn't translate well. And so I just want people to keep an open mind and say, you know what, go to a farm conference, like go to Farm Progress, like talk to these large scale farmers, explain, you know, what you want to do, talk to your farm bureau, go to your university, go to a farm conference, and just keep an open mind because people would be really pleasantly surprised.
I think yes to everything you just said. And I'm going to go back real quick before we sign off here. Florida Farm Finder, Jillian. I mean, you want to find your local farms in your area and go to Facebook and check that out, because the truth is in Florida, you're not more than 30 minutes away.
Yeah.
From an actual farm. I don't care where you live in Florida.
Literally.
30 minutes away, you're going to find a farm, you know?
Florida Farm Finder is great. There also is a lot of misinformation in that group too, because a lot of the misinformation is circled. As much as I love to support small local farms, they're wonderful. It is kind of the community of like, well, I can raise my cattle on pasture and I can raise my chickens on pasture. And it's like, congrats, I'm from Iowa. We can't raise chickens in January in Iowa. You know what I mean? Outside.
Yeah, in the end, everybody has to do their homework. Everybody needs to kind of do some research, you know, to just be spoon fed information and then choose a side is wrong. And that's why where we are today in society at large is that we're spoon fed. And there we are. We pick a side at this stage, get some information, get some data and learn. All right. Michelle, I appreciate you so much for coming out here today. Where do people find you?
Well, thefarmbabe.com is my website. I'm also doing an event, Farm Cruise, the Farmer Appreciation event on a Caribbean cruise.
Yes. Real quick, go. You got 10, 15 seconds. Go.
Farmcruise.com, thefarmbabe.com. Follow me on Facebook, Farm Babe.
I kind of wanted
you
to go.
Give me 10 seconds. I panicked.
Oh, my God. All right. Jeff?
Just email us. We'll find out more information for you guys. Yeah,
we'll put it out there for you because that sounds awesome. You're telling me about this trip. It sounds terrific. John, as always, you're freaking awesome. All this means, Michelle, is you're going to come back for round number 2.
Let's do it.
Okay. All right. By the way, Peninsula Food Service people, chefs, get out there. Do your thing. We are
out.
Let me tell you about my friends over at Citrus America and their amazing juicing equipment. They're revolutionizing the way you enjoy freshly squeezed juice. They're at the best hotels, restaurants, and markets. Their mission is simple. Develop a unique consumer experience with on-premise juicing, deliver healthy taste options to clientele, and juice more faster. It's that easy. Citrus America supplies the highest quality juicing equipment and solutions in the industry. So whether you're a small business owner or a large corporation, Citrus America has the right juicing equipment for you. Find out more at citrusamerica.com.
Get ready to innovate and organize your workspace with Metro. As the industry leader in storage and productivity solutions, Metro is here to transform and organize your kitchen. With their premium solutions, you'll experience the Metro difference. Metro's sturdy and versatile shelving units, workstations, holding cabinets, and utility carts are designed to streamline operations and maximize your productivity. Don't settle for imitators. Metro products last longer and offer unparalleled quality and durability. Plus, many customization options ensure that your workspace is tailored to your unique needs. Visit their website or contact them today to start designing your perfect space. Metro Shelving, your partner in organization and efficiency.
Let me tell you about my friends over at Citrus America and their amazing juicing equipment. They're revolutionizing the way you enjoy freshly squeezed juice. They're at the best hotels, restaurants, and markets. Their mission is simple. Develop a unique consumer experience with on-premise juicing, deliver healthy taste options to clientele, and juice more faster. It's that easy. Citrus America supplies the highest quality juicing equipment and solutions in the industry. So whether you're a small business owner or a large corporation, Citrus America has the right juicing equipment for you. Find out more at citrusamerica.com.